Now, I'd like to introduce a good friend of mine. We worked together some years ago at NPR, and you know her on local NPR programming. Let me introduce my friend, Laura Conoy. Laura.
Thank you, Carl, so much for coming to New Hampshire.
We had good times together.
We did have good times. Yeah. And before I start the interview part, everybody who's worked with this wonderful man has at least one Carl Castle story. I have a couple. All of them good. I met Carl when I was a junior weekend newscaster. And then as I got better and better, I would fill in on the during the week. So I'd fill in for Gene Cochran, and we'd work together. And I remember one time Carl was out, and they asked me to fill in for Carl. And I never told you this story, and it was New Year's morning. Yes, I was the low woman on the totem pole. I mean, who's listening at 5 o'clock but some drunk people in Hawaii? So. Yeah. But I was filling in for Carl, and I'd done, again, like I said, I'd done plenty of newscasting at that point, but I'd never filled in for him. And what you may not know is at that time, they have the newscast is 5 minutes, so it's 3 minutes, and then Carl says, this is NPR News. He takes a breath, and then he does 2 more minutes, and that's pretty much what most of us hear, but in some little teeny stations around the country, they don't have staff to do a local newscast the way we do in New Hampshire. So they have a four minute,
yep,
business newscast. So I had kind of forgotten about that because you don't hear it on most stations. So, and I was so nervous about filling in on his shoes. And I remember very, you know, and I'd been out for New Year's Eve because I was 28 years old. So, and I remember just getting ready, and it was getting closer, and it was 4 o'clock, and it was 4:30, and we're on at 5, and I was typing away, and I think Gene came over finally at about 5 minutes to 5 and said, are you ready yet? And honest to God, now I know how it feels to have a heart attack. I mean, on my chest and just sweating, and I really thought, honestly, I thought, what if I have a heart attack before I go in the studio? What will my mother say? So big shoes to fill, but Carl was such a pleasure to work with, and especially when you're new and you're young, and he was such a gentleman. So just such a pleasure to have you here, Carl. It's great.
Good to be here, Laura.
It's wonderful.
Good to see you again.
Well,
it's been many years.
And we haven't aged a bit, have
no,
we?
Not a bit.
You know, I thought it was so interesting, Carl, in your talk before. I want to ask about Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, because I think there's a lot of fans of Wait, Wait here. But you said news, you thought news was boring.
I did.
I'm a news gal. How come you thought news was boring?
Well, of course, at NPR, you look at the wires, you look at your sources, and you write your news. Back in North Carolina, we had a news machine that did that for me. So all you did was walk out there and rip it off, take it to the studio, and read. That was it. Playing records, programming music, cracking jokes, giving the time, doing commercials. That was fun. And, you know, the newscast just kind of interrupted what I was doing. So that's why, and nothing was happening. But we had the Korean War, but, you know, not much was going on. Thor, and we had Paul Harvey during the afternoon, and then commentators like, let them do the news. And, of course, ABC, we're an ABC station, they did the news at the top of the hour, but we had to fill in at the bottom of the hour sometimes. Didn't like it.
Yeah. So you talked about this a little bit, but you had to kind of come over to the news side kicking and screaming, yeah, or were you kind of starting to think, all right, maybe there's something here?
Well, I went to the station in Arlington, Virginia on a part-time basis, right, to begin with, because I could use the money. I had a young family there in the D.C. area, just new, and the full-time job was fine, but I could use some extra dough. So I worked the station in Alexandria, where I played records 5 days a week and 2 days a week at the all-news station in Arlington. And when they could make up the difference salary-wise, I went full-time with them as a morning anchor and finally worked my way up to news director. But it was one of those periods where a lot of things were happening back then. You had the Middle East Wars, you had the Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King assassinations, the weekly anti-war demonstrations on the mall downtown in Washington. So much was happening. It was a real new learning experience. And I found out later that Well, I was invited to go to the University of Maryland and address and talk to a journalism class. I thought, huh, me? I know nothing about journalism. I didn't study it. But I held my own with those kids. And I felt, by golly, maybe I have learned something here. And so I became news director and went to NPR, and that's my story.
The rest is history. Yeah. And tell us, Carl, about the early days of Morning Edition, because, you know, every program, The Exchange included, mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't come on the first day sounding pretty all the time. What were some of the sort of bumps in the road that you remember from those early
days?
Well,
you have bumps along the road, even when you've been on the air for a long time. But the audience doesn't recognize them. We know what they are and where they happen. But they did happen. But we had, with both programs to begin with the Morning Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, you have people out there who don't appreciate what you're doing. Get that thing off the air. And for Morning Edition, it was a case of, it's replacing my classical music, and I don't like that.
I know newspapers
from coast to coast from time to time would write editorials about the audience doesn't like it, so why are they forcing this down their throats? Well, in time, Morning Edition became the most listened to network news program, radio or TV, in the country. And it's up there again even today. So the bumps come along with people who don't like it, and later on they find out, hey, I do like it.
Well, and as you said, the bumps on the road in the early days of Morning Edition, we were talking in the car up here, mm-hmm. some bumps on the road in the early days of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me too, right? I mean, today it's so witty and so beautifully produced, but we were talking earlier that when it first came out, a lot of stations said, no, thank you.
They would never carry it. And today they're all carrying it, except for one. We won't talk about that one.
They're in California. Who cares about that?
Well, the program, I have a copy of the first program. Terrible. It really was.
What was so terrible about it?
Well, it really had no structure to it that would bring forth any laughter. Maybe it wasn't designed to be a funny quiz program, but when we did some pilots before we went on the air, we did them in New York. We would capture an audience from people walking around the street, you know, come in, listen to a radio program. They'd come in, and we had writers from Saturday Night Live, Seinfeld, and those coming in there writing our scripts for us. I had a guy standing behind me writing out, typing out on his computer one-liners for me to use. But it didn't work. It didn't work. So we had to play with different games. We had another host. Peter Sagal was the second host for Morning Edition, for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it really didn't work out. I couldn't do what Peter does. Wouldn't even attempt it. But he was brought on the program because we got word that this fella, Peter Sagal, is a writer primarily, and he's funny and quick. You might want to try him as a panelist. And we did. And after about 4 or 5 months on the air, they knew a change had to be made and decided to give Peter a chance at it, and it worked. He had no broadcast experience at all. I like to say that I taught him everything he knows about radio. And he has become a good friend, and he is good and quick. Well, when that happened, the program began to pick up steam, slowly, slowly, slowly. We tried different games from time to time, and when they worked, we kept it. And when it didn't work, we discarded it and did something new. Even today, we'll toss in a new game that we like to play from time to time. Like when we had in Charleston, South Carolina, reading headlines from different cities or from different papers, which is the real headline. And got some laughs out of one or two of those jokes in there. I won't repeat them.
Do you remember?
Yes, I do. how did it go? When a headline said, "Officer finds crack in criminal's buttocks after arrest." Crack cocaine, folks. That's what they left out the word cocaine. the crack between his buttocks. Damn, that went over very well. The audience loved it. I don't know if we used it on the air or not. Some things we don't use on the air. We don't follow a clock, folks, when we do Wait, Wait, if you've ever seen it. We just do it and edit it down, and a lot of good stuff doesn't make it on the air. But anyhow, we tried different games, and they began to work. And people would begin to return our calls when we asked them to be our celebrity guest, and that helped a lot, too. And with Madeleine Albright kind of leading the way, we began to get some good ones. But we used people inside NPR as our celebrity guests for a while and found out they were funny, too, from Corey Flintoff talking about fishing in Alaska, being a fisherman there, to Linda Wertheimer talking about working in her father's grocery store in New Mexico when she was growing up and getting some insights on what they are and who they are and where they came from.
There are a lot of games on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I know people wait for, oh, are they going to play this one this week or that one? Do you have a favorite, Carl,
well,
of all the games?
We pretty well settle on four, which is Who's Carl at the top. Then we play Bluff the Listener, which is next. And then we have their celebrity guest play a game, and then the limericks at the end. And in between, we have special questions for the panelists. And some are designed for specific panelists, too.
Have they ever asked you to go somewhere where you really didn't want to go?
No.
No.
Love to go. Love to go out, like visiting here and taking the show on the road.
I mean in terms of the content.
Oh, the content of the game.
Have they ever said, we want you to say this,
no.
And you said,
Well, this is what happens, Laura. I get to Chicago, I go to Chicago every week to do the show. Fly from D.C. on Thursday morning. And the show is done at the Chase Bank Auditorium in the Loop. They have an auditorium in the basement of the bank, which holds about 500 people, a good audience for our program. So I get to Chicago Thursday morning, go out to Navy Pier, where WBEZ is located. They give us some room to work, and they're finishing up the script for the show. And for the next 2.5 hours or longer, we go over that script almost line by line by line and make adjustments, changes, this isn't working, that's not going to, you know, that sort of thing. And no, we've done too many Republican jokes, we got to balance that with something else, you know, that sort of thing. And it's critiqued, and adjustments are made, and it's rewritten before 7:30 that evening when we do the show at the Chase Bank. So any questionable stuff that comes up will be noticed then and tossed out.
We were talking again on the car in the way up here, and you were just expressing, Carl, what a wonderful opportunity Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been for you after slogging through newscasts and getting up at 1:05. And just, I just want to ask you, what does this mean to you personally to make this pretty big shift after working so hard for all those years?
Work? I never worked. No, it's taken me back to doing what I wanted to do originally, entertain. And it's given me a chance to do that. Doug Berman, when he was given the job of developing a show, he thought back to the days of the old Groucho Marx program, You Bet Your Life. If you're old enough to remember it on television and radio, it was a program which was designed basically on Groucho, the guy who could ad-lib, he could come up with stuff, funny lines about anything at any time. And they used a quiz program in order to bring out his comic talents. And that's what we're doing today. Basically, that's what Berman, that's what he was basing the show's idea on. And of course, they needed somebody to bring a little class and distinction to the program. And for Groucho, it was George Fenneman. For Wait, Wait, it's me. Now, we have a slogan for Wait, Wait. It's called NPR Without the Dignity. But I like to think that I wear a tie on this show, you know, and Peter doesn't all the time. I've been trying to get him to do that, but he's, you know, had to work on him with his wardrobe at the beginning. He came along, but I kind of give the program balance.
You know, one of the big prize, obviously, is to have Carl record your home answering machine message. Do the people who win write out what they want you to say?
We let the winners write their own message, and
have there been some unusual ones over the years?
Well, there are different types. Some are rather straightforward, to a couple of lines perhaps, that nobody's home, give us, you know, leave a message, we'll call you back. Some go on at length, like it's a newscast. We don't know where they are. Police are looking for them, blah, 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 blah. And some are in the form of a limerick. Yeah. And some, they ask me to sing a song. What's new, pussycat? Yeah, blah, blah. You can go online, by the way, the Wait Wait website, and you can hear some of the messages if you've never heard any before. And that's basically it. Some are long, and as I said, some are rather brief. One that came up several years ago ended with the statement that because you have placed this call, $20 has been added to your phone bill, and what we collect from these calls will be passed on to the person who owns this phone, you know. And I remember Doug Berman had this problem. He was calling somebody in Florida about something, and they called that number, his number, because he wanted me to record a voice, a message like that for his phone, and they kept hanging up on him. They were not going to pay that $20. Of course, it was a joke.
You know, so in a way, it's Back to the Future for you.
Back to the Future.
You started off, that's wonderful.
Absolutely, yes. I love entertaining. I mean, I've had fun here tonight. I've told some jokes, you laughed.
You know, you mentioned Doug Berman, and I've read a quote from him. He said, I'm on a one-man mission to get NPR to lighten up. And, of course, we all know him as the creator of the wildly successful Car Talk. And now, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes, sir.
Why do you suppose NPR needs to lighten up? What is it about us that we're so darn serious all the time?
Okay, let me give an example. When 9/11 hit, the following week, we did not do a show. Okay.
No, because, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
No, yeah. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We did not do a show because the coverage of 9/11 was still wall-to-wall, 24 hours a day. The following week, you'll do a show. How will we do it? What do we do? This big tragedy. How can we be funny after that? And after a lot of soul-searching, we decided to just do our show the way we've always done it. We did. And the response was this: thank you. We needed to laugh again.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what on earth did you find to joke about in the news context, though? Because that's what you do. You kind of
there are other
play
things,
light with the
there
headlines.
There are other things besides that you can grasp and bring in. We can always say, we know what happened, so-and-so, so-and-so, but here's some other things that happened during the week or before the week, and do it that way.
So what is it about NPR audiences that needs Doug Berman to come in and lighten us up with these wonderful shows?
Well, I think I needed it. You know, just
to
help us relax a little bit.
Right.
And then give us a chance to reflect later in a relaxed manner on what's happened and what we were doing.
In just a couple minutes, we're going to start taking questions from you, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Carl, we were talking before about when we were both newscasters, and obviously you were a lot more experienced than I was, but we both had newscast nightmares, where you're in a dream, and mine were very varied. You know, one was I had to cross a 7-lane highway to get to the newscast booth. Another one was I was in a food court, and I couldn't find my way to the booth. One time the script turned into Portuguese, and I couldn't read it on the air.
Oh, yeah.
Another time it turned into a bowl of noodle soup, and they're so real, and you wake up and you go, oh, thank goodness, it's only a dream. Did you have newscast nightmares in all over those many years that you were a newscaster?
I had one that kept repeating itself from time to time. I haven't had it in a long time, though. But years ago, I would be getting ready for my 6 o'clock newscast, and I'd written one piece of copy, and I'm on the air in 1 minute. What do? I just panicked. You're sitting down there, you're trying to bang out 5 minutes of news in no time, and you wake up.
And say, thank goodness.
I'm glad I woke up.
And they're scary. I remember waking up in a cold sweat. Mm. And there's a story, though, about a colleague of ours who that did happen to, right? I mean, he ran out.
He ran out of John Hockenberry. John used to be a newscaster on All Things Considered. And he went into his in the studio one day to do his newscast, and he read it, and the audio that he was going to be using didn't work. So that meant John's coming up with another minute or so of news he's got to read. But he didn't prepare for another minute and a half of news. So he came up short, and he apologized to the audience. He said, "Folks, I apologize. I just ran out of copy ahead of time. Now, here's a moment of silence." He had engineers in the control room scrambling for a record so fast, you know, to put it on and play it with music. So ever since, well, I knew long before then that you always carry more copy than you'll ever need into the studio, because you may need it sometime. And I've began calling my extra copy a moment of silence. And I had to use it once because we were moving into the digital age, whereby all of our audio in the newscast was going to be not on a cassette to take into the control room, but it was going to be in a machine, digitized, in other words, digital. And we installed the system, and we began to work with it day after day after day, always taking in the tape, by the way, in case we need it, and if this thing didn't work. But it was perfect. Worked fine, day by day by day by day. Okay, folks? Work came down on Friday. Beginning on Monday, no more cartridges, no more audio on tape from here on out, because this system works fine. I went in to do my 5 o'clock newscast on that Monday morning. I called for my first audio report. Nothing happened. And nothing happened the second time I called for it. But I had my moment of silence, and I sat there and read for 8.5 minutes, actually. But the next morning, as a matter of fact, by 5:30, it was working for the next newscast.
Right. Well, and moment of silence in the radio business, you might as well just say death.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
It's pretty much the
a
same
moment
thing.
A moment is like an eternity.
It is. It
you
is.
You can't believe how long of just a few seconds can be.
Right.
Whoa.
Well, I learned from you and Gene, always bring in a big, thick stack just in case.
Right.
You know, one more question, Carl, from me, and then we'll go to our audience. Here you are, I mean, you're having a great time, you're the roving ambassador, you're doing Wait, Don't Tell Me. It was just a wonderful time in your life. Is there anything you miss about the newscast days?
In a way, I do. When a big story like the Osama bin Laden thing breaks, you kind of, well, it would have been nice to be in there, but I'm having so much fun as the roving ambassador, going from state to state, station to station, and meeting with audiences like we have here, and getting thoughts and ideas from our listeners. I'm enjoying it. I'm having a good time doing it. And of course, Wait is right there. They kind of, it's like icing on the cake.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Thank you.
All right, and now it's your turn to come up to the microphones. It's a big opportunity to ask face-to-face a question to Carl Castle, so don't miss the opportunity, don't be shy, and good evening, sir. Thanks for coming out.
Hi, thanks a lot. Carl, I have several questions that I've been thinking about because I was really hoping they'd do this part with the microphone. So I'm going to go with this one. Who would you like to have as a guest on Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Who will I?
I got a follow-up question if you want the other one instead.
Well, we had Barack Obama already. I'm hoping that we, as we tried the last presidential cycle, get as many of the candidates who were trying out for their party's nomination as possible on the air. We got most of them 4 years ago. And they're also turned out to be quite funny, some of them did. Even Ron Paul. Yes.
Have you met the guys from Car Talk?
Have I met the guys from Car Talk? Oh yeah, they're good buddies, Tom and Ray Malyatsi, and they're just as crazy in person as they are on the air.
Would you let them touch your car?
You know, I would.
You would?
I have had several mechanics tell me, they're listeners, these guys know what they're talking about. Yeah, they do. Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello.
You said that you went over the script for like 2.5 hours, but is any of your like show on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me just kind of spur of the moment unscripted?
Did you understand that?
Any of the moments, you said you go over the script, but mm-hmm. how much of it is unscripted? That's your question?
Right. Oh, well, a lot of it is. The questions are scripted for the panelists, but their answers are not. and they don't know what the questions are. So what you hear the panelists answering the questions, they are making it up as they go along, and they're making jokes out of it. So that's a good question, though. They don't want to know, and we don't want them to know either. And by the way, they do write their own bluffs on the Bluff the Listener. They do. We don't write it for them. They write their own. Yes.
I'm a big Anglophile, and one of my favorite BBC programs is The New Show, which is kind of similar to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I was wondering if you ever listened to that show or other shows for sort of cross-fertilization, or is that sort of kind of like cheating, if you get jokes from other news quiz shows?
A lot of news quiz shows? No, we just pick the news, I guess, to build a quiz show around. And maybe early on there were some variations of a news show. We finally hit on the right formula and doing it our way. Jon Stewart does it his way, Stephen Colbert does it his way, and we do it our way. And by the way, they're two great guys. We've had Stephen on our show before, and I got to meet him four or five years ago in New York. He is not what you see on TV. He is a very gentle, soft-spoken guy. He really is. Yes.
Talking about unscripted and the fact that there's an awful lot that you don't hear on the radio. Last Saturday, you were doing a real good number on Congressman Wiener. And I was just wondering if you could share an outtake or two, because what got on the air was pretty edgy.
What you heard there was, I think, everything that the whole shebang with about Wiener. Because if it's funny, something like that, if he's dumb enough to in a situation like that, we appreciate it because it's material.
Go ahead, sir. Thanks for coming out.
We're looking at specific candidates for president now. Oh, boy, I'm glad they're there. Yes.
I think we're on a theme here. I was wondering how much prominence you were going to give to Anthony Weiner jokes this coming weekend.
Well, we did it last week, and I have no idea what they got planned for this week. I'll find out Thursday.
So I've seen a couple of news weeks where not much has happened. What do you do if there's not much interesting to talk about?
What do we do? Laura, you've been there before, too.
Do you mean in the news, or in the newscast? Wait, come back. Do you mean if there's not enough to talk about when Carl was a newscaster, or more if there's not enough to poke fun at for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Well, either one.
Either one, okay. Great.
Wait.
Well, I guess I would take the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me first. I mean, are there weeks where you just look at the news and you just go...
You're going to find something. There's always something there. If it's not a dumb politician, it's a dumb criminal, or something comes along. There's always something. I can look at the newspaper, or when I was doing the news, look at the wires and say, that story's going to be on Wait, Wait this week. You have that feeling. So it's there. There's always something there.
But for the regular news, it's also good. It's a good question. Yeah.
I always joke, I'll just make it up. No. No, you can always find something, too. There's always something, some big story going on somewhere in the world that is of interest.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you ever have, like, a backup backup story that you can talk about? Like, if one of your main stories, something changes or something like that your regular news years?
Well, sure, you've always, you're following what's happening in the world and what's coming up next. And if one story appears bigger than the other, then you lead with that. Otherwise, you stay with the lead you've been going with.
Sometimes there's a little, I don't want to say a struggle, but you'd have to talk to your editors. This is in the newscast context about, you know, they want you to lead with this, but you want to lead with that, and you have to sort of decide what you're going to lead with. And that can be tricky.
I've always felt the newscast rather had the last decision.
Yes, because when you're in the booth, you're there all by yourself.
You're darn right. I think I'll lead with this.
But I remember specifically being on the air with you around the time of the O.J. Simpson trial, and I didn't want to lead with that every hour. I just didn't want to do that. And I remember sort of feeling like I had to, but then I got in the booth and I would kind of go and switch it around a little bit and not lead with O.J. every hour. You know?
I felt back in those days, I've got only 5 minutes to do a newscast. And basically 3 minutes, because most stations cut away after 3 minutes. And there's so many important things happening in the world today.
Absolutely.
That O.J. is on the bottom of the list. And most of the time, it didn't make it. That was it. Yes.
Go ahead.
So excited to be here with you this evening, Carl Castle. Welcome to New Hampshire.
It's great
first
to be
in the
here.
Nation primary. So a two-part question. Wonder if you would share with us your impressions of the Granite State since you've been here. I doubt this is your first visit. Also wondering if anybody's standing out for you in terms of the Republican field of candidates.
Anybody who stands out? Well, I love New Hampshire. I've been here several times. Been here many, many times. I love the state. It's beautiful here. I'm commenting today how lush and green the state is right now. I love this time of year. It doesn't matter who's going to be the candidate or who's going to be leading or what. On the show, we're going to have fun with them anyhow. And then anywhere along the line, they're going to say something. All of them are going to say something we can use. It may not be a stupid mistake particularly or something big and funny that we can work with, but we'll find something amusing. And if we can get them on the show as our celebrity guest, then we can have fun with them. And it's amazing how you find out with these people, the candidates, how charming they can be and can be quite funny. We had on the show about 2-3 weeks ago the governor of New Mexico, who is a candidate, can't think of his name, but he was charming. He was good.
Gary Johnson?
Yes, yes.
Yes, we had him on our show, too.
Yeah, he was good, yeah.
You know, it's a good question, though, because you do hear that, sometimes you hear that political cartoonists really want this candidate to win, you know, so they can have a field day.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It is a great question.
Sure, but when we get them on, we're not there to make it, to embarrass them or anything there. We just want to find out who they are and what they like and find out the funny side of them. And we usually, Peter's good at digging that out, too.
And candidates are more open to that these days.
Yeah, and usually our intern does most of the work. Learn as much about their background as possible. And then Peter, the day before the show, he'll call them up and talk with them for a few minutes to get a feel of how he can talk with them. And that together makes for a good interview on the show the next day.
Have you ever regretted taking a joke too far on a candidate? I realize once you're in office, perhaps they're fair game, but do you ever sometimes feel like you've been a little too rough on somebody who's made a tumble publicly at the mic or in answering a question?
Well, I don't know about any one individual, but when we got so many candidates, you've got a lot of material there to work with. But once they're in office, hey, they're free game after that.
Go ahead. Thanks for coming out.
Radio's been around for a long time, but now there are lots of other types of media. I mentioned the internet and Facebook and social media of different kinds. And for the budding Laura Kanoy or Carl Castle in our audience, what advice would you give them in terms of planning their career if they wanted to be a broadcaster like the two of you?
There's so many things happening in our business nowadays.
Yeah.
Really a lot. People who want to get into the business, and this is my advice. In the old days, you go around to a radio station, you just hang out. Talk to the guys there. Soon they have you taking out the garbage. And then, hey, would you go to the record room and get so-and-so record for me? Get it for me. And pretty soon you're a DJ yourself. Nowadays, and I can, I look to Katie Couric, for one, as a volunteer, as an intern, public radio station would be an ideal place to go, because they are the ones, I think, today who are really doing real radio that I grew up with. Be a volunteer. One prime example of that was 30-some years ago. This woman at WAMU in Washington, you know who I'm talking about, she was a volunteer, and they had a talk show in the morning, and the host didn't make it for some reason, and would you mind, do you think you could do this? We know you like to talk. So Diane Rehm went in and filled in that first morning as a volunteer, and she never left the show. So you never, never know. If you've got something going for you and you really work hard enough, I think you can make it. Yes?
When Wait Wait goes on the road, do you have any influence as to where they go? And if you do, can you bring them to Manchester?
Well, I really don't have any influence at all. The decision is made by the staff there. Michael Danforth, our senior producer, and he has the last word. So yeah, get on Michael's case. I'd love to come back here.
Although, just to add on, you know, with the first in the nation primary, there's a lot of material there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, darn right.
Just to put in an extra word.
Yeah, I do that.
That's great. Thank you. Good evening. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dan, and I have a comment, then a question. My comment is, I'm here with my sister Debbie tonight because 10 years ago when I moved back to the state, she turned me on to NPR. So ever since that, I went back to college here, as a matter of fact, got a couple degrees, and really it worked out, so I'd like to think NPR had something to do with that. But I wanted to thank my sister Debbie for turning me on to NPR, because I get to realize talent like you. So thank you.
Wonderful.
For that. Thank you, Debbie. And then my question is, Deb was actually on the show, Wait Wait, when, last month?
About a month and a half ago.
And I wanted to know if you know what voicemail she would be.
Oh, really?
What number? But anyway, that's my own question. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
Oh, thank you.
You want
to
answer? Okay. I guess you wouldn't know.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, my name's Linda, and it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming. My question is, there are so many times where I'm listening to an NPR story and I'm weeping because the emotional content is so high. How, doing a news broadcast, do you get through some of those really emotional stories?
I've had that question thrown at me a lot.
That's a good one.
The only time I can recall a journalist ever having that problem was Walter Cronkite when Kennedy was assassinated. For me, when you have a big story like 7-Eleven or the Challenger or Oklahoma City bombing or whatever, you don't have time to think about it. You're aiming at the next newscast you're doing, and you're so busy trying to get the information together, you don't think about it. It's when you finish your shift and you go home that it may catch up with you sometimes. But it's difficult, in a way, when you have a story like 9/11 going on, and gosh, the planes, the collapse of the buildings, and the Pentagon, and the plane crash in Pennsylvania. It's quite a lot at one time, but we manage.
You see, it is hard.
It is hard.
It is hard because you feel people's pain and you put yourself in their shoes. And
sure.
It's tough.
And you think, well, could it happen to me right now in
right.
a few minutes?
Right.
Like me looking out the window at planes out there, if there are any planes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's a good one. Thank you. Go
thanks.
Ahead.
Hi. I'm actually Debbie.
Oh, you're the Debbie.
When I was on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, one of the things I really appreciated was the editing.
Uh-huh.
Because some of the stupid things that I felt like I said got edited out. And my question is, with a show like Morning Edition, does any type of editing happen, or do you just kind of go with it?
Well, for Morning Edition, the program itself, not the newscast, the program itself, that program is usually designed the day before as to what segments are going to be in it and what are going to be in those segments. And some of the material is prepared a day in advance. But on a breaking story, it's done that morning. And the edit, the each segment, when it's like they're 10-minute segments or 9-minute segments in the program, one editor or one producer is assigned to it, select the audio, edit it, that, and write the copy and prepare it for the anchor. And that goes through another editor who checks it to be it's correct, and the grammar and so forth, and factually correct, of course. So it goes through a process that that weeds out any mistakes we may have in there. You went through that.
And sometimes you can hear the difference between the story at 5 o'clock versus the story at 7 o'clock because mm-hmm. they've cleaned it up a little bit if mm-hmm. it's live at 5, so, yeah. mm-hmm. right.
And
right.
same thing with the newscast. You have a story that's going to be your lead perhaps all morning, and you write it in one way for 5, and when you write it again, it's a little different. Same content, but expressed in a different way.
I did have someone on All Things Considered ask me, because there is a difference between the newscast unit, which is always live and, you know, always fresh and new. Someone on All Things Considered, Weekend All Things Considered, asked me once, well, can't you just record the newscast and go home? Yeah, I said, right, no, I can't right. do that.
No, can't do that.
Go ahead.
Hi, Carl. This is kind of a weird question, but there are pictures from Wait Wait of you and different panelists holding up just a toy duck. Is there any significance to that? Because it's just always been something I've wondered about.
A toy duck? I don't remember that. A toy duck. I mean, well, we've had some weird photographs taken during during that time, but I don't recall that.
By the way, we still have lots of time to take your questions, so
yes,
don't be shy.
Yes, yes.
Come to the microphone. Mm. If you are too shy to come to the mic, Carl is also going to be on the exchange with me tomorrow morning at 9. So if you're too shy to come to the mic tonight, you can call in tomorrow. Go ahead. Thanks for being here.
Hi. I hate to ask a bummer question, but what's your opinion of the certain factions in the government who want to cut federal funding for NPR?
That's awful. It's awful, and we hope that we can get around that. I know they're trying their darndest to come up with some ways to do it.
I guess the gentleman in the yellow shirt, that was your question, too.
Uh-huh.
All right, great.
Hello. Our children are living in times of unprecedented peril and change when airplanes fall out of the sky and oceans don't stay in their banks. What legacy could you leave them as far as humor goes, the ability to laugh, to forgive? What can humor give the world, and what can we tell our children about?
Well, I think we need to laugh at ourselves sometimes, and I think that's what we're doing on Wait Wait. We're taking looking at ourselves and laughing at ourselves and our neighbors and the people and people who make a fool of themselves. So it's like my career. I've never looked at my career as being work. It's been fun. I've had 61 years of fun being on the air doing broadcasting. Some people call it work. Some broadcasters would call it work, too, but I never thought it was work. It's what I always wanted to do. And as far as laughing, yeah, let's laugh at ourselves. We do a lot of stupid things ourselves and some good things, which can be funny, too. And have a car breakdown. Car guys can help us. Yes.
Back to the bummer question. I guess the fundamental issue is, why should the government be involved in public broadcasting? And I was wondering what your take is on that. I mean, that's the answer to the criticism coming from legislators.
Yeah, I know. I think the system was established by Congress many years ago because I think there was some problem there with commercial radio going one-sided on one political end of the political spectrum or the other side, and we needed something that would be neutral, that there would be no influence with money from one side or the other. And so if we could set up the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and fund them and let the public also help pay for public broadcasting, then we would have that neutrality there. I think that's basically it.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Carl, I got two parts.
Sure.
Two questions, really. Have you ever drawn the line and said, I'm not doing that? I mean, we'll take it to this point, but I'm not going to do that, especially on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Have you ever said that's just gone too far, or have you not?
Anything particular you're thinking about?
Well, I know one place where we didn't draw the line. I was going to ask you to repeat it tonight. I don't know. Well, I mean, what, the second part?
Yeah.
Did you do the ray gun noise?
The what now?
The ray gun.
The ray gun?
Yeah, Peter Siegel said to do a ray gun,
yeah,
and
what
the
it
panel
was.
Had great sport with that.
Well, you know, they asked me
it
to do
like
some,
a heart monitor,
yeah,
they said.
Yeah, they asked me to do some stupid things sometimes, and I'll give it a shot, you know, just because it's fun. But as far as like telephone voice messages, I will not do a commercial. I don't think it's my job to do that. But I will mention that you have so-and-so of so-and-so business, but to promote your commodity or whatever, I won't do that. And nobody asks for that. But any other thing, sure, I'll do it within reason. And they've always been very good. No cussing, no profanity, nothing like that.
Like, the radio has been around for a long time, and it was the media at one point. Mm-hmm. And over the years, it has had to change because new media and new competition has come in. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about that change over the time, and how do you think the radio is going to change now?
Well, back in the 1950s, radio was going great guns, and TV came along, and everybody's writing radio's obituary, and I think some of their best days followed that. Those are the days when I was in radio, up to the 1960s, and still up to the present day. We have the electronic media now, the websites and so forth, that we're heavy into also at NPR. You don't hear us say radio anymore. This is NPR. Not National Public Radio. This is NPR, because we are heavy into online stuff. But I think radio itself, which is our supposed to be, and it is our basic function at NPR, it's going to be around a long time. I mean, you as long as you got a car radio, things like that, radio is there to stay.
I have a suggestion for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Laura Canoy could help you with this. If you're ever thin on material, she should feed you some of the material coming out of the New Hampshire State House.
This just popped into my head, but were either of you ever tempted to or offered a job in television? Were you ever tempted to leave broadcasting?
Yeah. And television? No, they said I had a perfect face for radio, so so here I am. No, I never have had the offer. You know, we did about 3-4 years ago, and this is no secret, CBS had the idea that Wait, Wait might go as a television program. Their afternoon producer, I forgot her name now, but she had been pushing the network for a long time for us to at least do a pilot, see how it worked. And we did a pilot in California. They worked on it for weeks before that, getting writers and a script and so forth, and how we're going to do this and this and so forth. And even I went out 2 weeks ahead of time for a fitting. Oh, yes. I talked to this guy a week ahead of time, gave him my suit measurements and so forth and so on. And they had about a half dozen suits for me and Peter to try on. And the woman who was in charge, she selected our wardrobe for us. And, you know, they let us keep it, too. That was nice. I'm still wearing the belt. But anyhow, we did the show. We had on our panelists were Tom Odette, Moraka, and Tracy Ullman. CBS wanted to make a choice themselves, so they did. And it wasn't all that bad. It wasn't exactly what the radio version is like, but the basic stuff was there. And they played it to a focus group in Las Vegas. They didn't know what it was about. So it didn't go over too well, and it didn't make it. But anyway, we had fun doing it.
I wonder why they picked a focus group in Las Vegas.
That's what I want to know. We even went back and re-edited the thing. We had, as our celebrity guest, Ed Rendell, the former governor of Pennsylvania. We'd had him on the show about three or four years ago. No, 4 years ago when we thought we were going to get Hillary on the show when we did Pittsburgh. But she was called back to Washington for a Senate vote, and Ed Rendell, the governor then, he filled in for her. Nice guy, very, very cordial, a lot of fun. And so he was one of our guests. And we did the show twice for editing purposes, of course. Had fun doing it, but didn't go. That's as far as it went.
That's all right.
That's okay.
It's all right.
We had fun.
Still good on the radio.
But you know what? I think that we will be doing maybe sometime later this year. I may be wrong about this, but a televised version of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me that'll be sent to theaters around the country, and people can buy tickets to go and see that version in the theater.
Great.
Yeah. So
time
for that.
One last question. Go ahead.
I just want to say a big thank you. About 5 years ago, I met my husband, and he turned me on to NPR. And one of the only ways that he was able to get me to listen to all of that boring news was Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. Last wrap-up question, and that is all the time we have.
Boring
and
news.
I want to thank everybody for coming out. And remember, the conversation continues tomorrow morning at 9 on The Exchange. We'll be live with Carl. We'll take your calls. So join us tomorrow morning at 9. And a big thank you to all of you for coming out here at Daniel Webster College. And a huge thank you to Mr. Wonderful Carl Castle. Thank you, Carl.
Fun. Yeah, fun.